Welcome everyone to the House of 1229. I'm Tammy Haddad. Yes, thank you. Thank you for applauding at my name because we've got big stars here and I appreciate it. And it's been a year since we started gathering to talk about AI policy, legislation, and what role official Washington is playing in the development of AI. We've talked to government leaders, policy leaders, AI technologists, and advocates. And today, we turn to the funders who are investing in the future of AI. We're gathered here for a special night, the official DC launch of the General Catalyst Institute. Yes, that General Catalyst. That's right, the legendary venture capital firm is here in our nation's capital. General Catalyst is one of the largest U.S.-based VC firms, having invested in everything from Anduril to Stripe, and now, and some of the most talked about global AI firms. And tonight marks the start of GC's next big chapter with the launch of the General Catalyst Institute. And my guests are Haman Tanaji, the CEO of General Catalyst. Let's hear it for him. And Teresa Carlson, president of the new General Catalyst Institute. You can feel the excitement, you two in the room. Here as history is being made. Teresa, both of you, welcome, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
You have a long history in Washington and technology and policy. Some people in the room still call you the godmother of the cloud, but why do we need
that? Can I just be mother? Godmother sounds kind of old. So
okay, you could be mother. Okay, all right, you can be whatever you want to be. Yes, exactly. But tell us why the General Catalyst Institute.
Well, first of all, Tammy, thank you for having us here and everybody coming to celebrate with us the launch of General Catalyst Institute. This is a really important effort for, I think, just policy in general for the advocacy of really transformative technology. And General Catalyst is really leading the way. I shared with everybody this week, I've been working with General Catalyst and Haman and the team now for a bit over a year as an advisor and then came on full-time just not that long ago. But Haman and I have been talking for a while about the importance of public policy. And if you're having an effort globally around global resilience in the areas that General Catalyst invest in, AI, healthcare, manufacturing, defense, intelligence, energy, financial services, these are all the cornerstones of global resilience. And you can deploy capital in a really amazing way. You can invest in the very best technological innovation that's out there. You can have a framework for driving societal change. But guess what? If you don't have public policies that help shape that in the right way, it doesn't become a true reality. And what has been so impressive to me is my career has been in public sector a lot. I keep coming back to it. I think, oh, I'm going to do more commercial, and I keep kind of being drawn back into the heart and soul. It's not for the faint of heart, but it's very meaningful. And Haman, he can talk about this himself, but the thing that I was so impressed with, for a long time, he's actually been doing public policy, kind of on his own, seeing it as an investor and a thought leader in, I call it a little bit of a bespoke way. He did an energy initiative. He's done a healthcare initiative.
You're stealing all my questions.
Well, you didn't go into this, but he did the Responsible Innovation Labs. And I said, okay, what we said is if we do this in a much more organized fashion, we can really drive the change. And so far, we've gotten really great feedback from everybody that this is important because they haven't seen venture capital really engage at the top level, at the industry sector level. So really excited about it, Tammy. And I think that, you know, so excited to have you all here today to talk about it.
It's great to have you in Washington, but I guess this means you think we're the future.
Wow. First of all, thanks for having us, Tammy. I would say the next 25 years of what we're focused on as a firm is all about leveraging technology to drive industry transformations. And a lot of that is focused on industries that need resiliency worldwide. So that's healthcare, defense, energy. And you can't transform if you don't have the right stakeholders around the table. And there is no way as a technology industry we can do it alone. I don't think you can do it alone just with policy. And it can't be just with deploying capital in a serendipitous, unintentional way in this industry. So for us, a lot of the focus around building this institute is to sort of become that convening place where we can bring the different stakeholders together and develop what that transformation strategy ought to be.
So, Teresa, how do you plan to have impact here?
Well, the first thing was letting people know we're here. And everybody knows in this city and any other city, we launched here yesterday and you'll see us now. We have a launch schedule in the UK, in Delhi in November, UK in October, and then Brussels in December. And then we'll follow in 2025, but that's our schedule. And Hamet's been very clear at GC, we're a global firm. We need to drive global impact. So one is letting people know we're here. So that's thing one. And as an example, this morning, we had a breakfast meeting with think tanks, and some of them were right of center and left of center. And that's great because we want to work with everyone. And we got to hear their feedback. We got to really listen. And I think the first step is listening. We don't want to walk in and just be like, we know everything. We're walking in. We want to work really collaboratively with government. And the one thing I've always said, I believe in partnerships. GC believes in partnerships. So we want to go in. We want to have a partnership. And a lot of people say it's impossible to have a partnership with government. That is just absolutely not true. My career has been about partnerships with government around the world. So we want to listen. We want to learn. We want to advocate. We want to educate. We want to bring our technology companies. GC's invested in over 600 tech companies. They also partner on a variety of other things. We want to bring in lots of startup tech so they can see these founders. We want to show them. We want to tell them. We want to bring solutions to the table. And for us, it's not about what's going wrong and what can't be done. It's about what can be done. So that's our approach. Think tanks, educational institutions, NGOs, individual experts, government directly, that will be our approach. And we'll work proactively with them and we'll push on areas that we believe will drive transformative innovation, but not hurt these companies because, you know, we talk about light touch regulation. If you over-regulate, then a lot of these startups, they can't afford that. And if every state starts regulating and every country has a totally different approach, you're gradually stomping out the innovation because these startups, there won't be enough capital in the world. And GC is one of the best companies in the world to deploy the capital. So they'll deploy it. We'll work to make sure we get these companies in front of the policymakers to get the right policies in place.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Because everyone's talking about a different way to regulate AI all around the world. So, Hamant, when you hear from these founders, what are you telling them? And what are they telling you?
First thing I often say is this is peak ambiguity. Because if you think about it, the geopolitics, how the global trade is changing, the reglobalization going on, and then you've got this massive tectonic shift in terms of technology and AI, none of us really know what the world's going to look like in the future. In that setting, I think you sort of go back to your core values and you think about navigating that ambiguity with a true north. And for us, it is, we often call inclusive capitalism. How do you think about sustainability? How do you think about bringing everybody along? And hence the word global resilience. And there, what we tell the founders is, think about the unintended consequences that might happen with AI. Think about the fact that a lot of the businesses that we build with AI are largely about transforming industries. AI is not an innovation force per se, it's a transformation force because it creates value for businesses that already have scale, they have customers, they have data, and therefore they can actually leverage AI. So when we think about that transformation, what are we really doing? We're actually introducing an AI workforce that sits next to the human workforce, and that has implications on how these businesses get run, and B, what's going to happen to work for the rest of us as it becomes more and more economical to use more and more of the AI workforce in different use cases. So being intentional about what is the world we're creating, in some ways, industry by industry, and then department by department in any given business, what is that going to look like is something we talk a lot about with the founders. And I'll give you an example. We have a business that's building AI-based call centers. And what happened in the last 30 years, because of the globalization and the ability to leverage offshore labor, we sent a lot of those jobs to countries like Philippines and India and others, and we sort of took advantage of labor productivity. With AI, we're going to onshore with AI productivity all those jobs back. So we'll build these vibrant, really interesting next generation call center businesses at a high margin. We will also eviscerate hundreds of thousands or millions of jobs in these countries. So as founders, we do tell them to think about the fact that there are these consequences to what you're building and how do we sort of step up? And that's part of why we created the General Catalyst Institute is let's go work with those governments to help them create their own capabilities around AI so they can uplift their people while market forces bring a lot of those jobs back onshore to the developed world.
So in a way, you're almost like a futurist going to countries and explaining where business is going.
Absolutely. I think business is fundamentally going to change. if you think about a 21st century company that's AI native, it would look very different. Because you may not create departments that are your legal department and your contact center department and your sales department. You might actually just have APIs to these AI services, and you invoke these AI workforces that do that work for you. So what happens to all the jobs? I think you can envision businesses that become very successful, very profitable as a result of that, but also need a lot fewer jobs. And imagine that happening, and this is not a 5-year comment, this is not a 10-year comment, this is probably a 30-year comment, but imagine that happening worldwide, and what are the implications to work? And we have to have a theory of change we want to drive towards in the way we build these companies.
It's funny, starting the Washington AI Network, I've been surprised how many people in government, private industry have come together because they don't really know what's happening. But it sounds like you're doing that on a global scale and talking to the different countries and bringing all the players together. Let's go back to the founders for a minute. I want to ask both of you, because you're clearly trying to get more startups up and running. I think that's the race in AI, to try to get as many businesses around the world. I don't mean just in the US. So how do you apply the plans for GCI into the startups? Are you going to talk to them? You talked about all the stakeholders, but how do you incorporate those views? It sounds like you're going to be a little bit of an educational program for them.
Before we ever launched, for some months now, we've actually just been going around talking to our founders. We have a lot of them here today in the audience, so thank you for being here, and some soon-to-be founders. But we spent a lot of time, Tammy, talking to them, just hearing from them, like, what are they doing today? How are they approaching public policy? How are they thinking about a regulatory environment? We ask them how they think about it. What are they doing about it? And then what are their key issues and concerns? So we try to do that across all of our broad sectors that we discuss that we think are kind of the cornerstone pillars of global resilience. And we have so many great founders, and they all had a really great and unique perspective. And I actually learned something from all of them. So what our plan is, we are taking all that into consideration. Everything we do, we've said we won't do it on behalf of one of those companies, but we'll do it on behalf of all of those companies in that sector. And it may not be 100% for everybody, but we just had this great conversation today. Everybody who's in Washington, D.C. knows it'd be great if we always got 100% solution that we all loved for everything we're doing. But generally, that's not the case here. You get maybe a 70 to 80%, and there's always compromise. And so for us, I think it'll be the same with our founders. We'll compromise. So that'll be one thing. But the second thing that Miriam and I are going to do is we also are putting together training and education tools for them. So we'll work with them on the how. How do you approach them, or how do you consider it? How do you think about it when you're building a company? We also have a lot of them just ask us, how do you sell and work in government? So they're also just interested, like, I want to build a government business. And we have great partnerships already that we're forging that will help them. So one, it's listening to them, learning from them, taking what they say, applying it, and then us coming back and training and educating them too. And then I think better together will be our solution.
By the way, she was mentioning Miriam Muyiwa, our dear friend, the new global chief of policy for the GCI. Let's give her a round of applause. Yeah. Hold on.
So the discussion that Teresa and I have had about what would make us successful at the GC Institute, it really entails two things. One is, if we can be an honest broker and real thought partner to the governments, here obviously in DC, but around the world, in how to think about the transformation of these industries on the long-term arc. How should we think about driving resiliency for different nations? How do we think about the role of technology? I think that would be a great place to be. And in order to do that, we have to be non-transactional. We don't want to come here and try to drive policy to benefit any one of our individual companies. We'd rather spend that energy training our founders to be good leaders that embrace policy and learn how to do business with the government. So I think our goal is make them more effective, because technology industry has not been that sophisticated about engaging with policy. The conventional wisdom is, if policymakers are paying attention to you, it's a good thing, meaning you made it. And then you'll deal with the problems rather than being proactive and intentional about how to work together. So I think we want to bring that cultural mindset to the industry. And then with the government, it's very much about how do we think long term? What should the future of work look like? What should the evolution of these industries look like? For example, what is the reglobalization of manufacturing in this world? And how do we think about defense and deterrence and really investing in those capabilities? Or how do we make sure we're ready for the next pandemic? How do we really build the ecosystem of companies that prepare us for that? That's the place where we want to be the innovation thought partner to governments.
I want to turn to national security, but first, you put together a group of all the VCs, or many of the top VCs, working with Secretary Raimondo to work on the AI guardrails and to come up with some ideas. How's that been going? Is there anything you can report to us on that?
Yeah, so we worked on creating a protocol for how entrepreneurs should be leveraging AI as they build the companies in this phase. And part of the rationale was, rather than forcing regulators to be afraid of AI and regulate too fast, if we can demonstrate a good code of conduct and self-responsibility as founders, we can build intentionally and navigate this ambiguity, to my earlier point, sort of together, before we figure out what the regulations really should look like. Because it's very complicated. On one side, you want to make sure here in America, we don't fall behind in the race for AI. On the other side, we want to make sure as we apply it to the rest of the world, we don't create unintended consequences. And so how do you really balance that? And how do you create a framework? Some of it has to come to us with the benefit of time. And we didn't want to rush that. So that's why we worked with the Commerce Department, wrote a protocol, got a lot of companies to embrace. And I would say it was met with mixed results. I think there are a lot of founders, hundreds of companies that embraced that idea. And there were many that were afraid that it's about inviting regulation which slows down progress, which was not the intent on either side, actually. And so I think it goes back to just the cultural transformation of the technology industry, where the idea of collaborating with the government doesn't necessarily translate to create regulation and slow down progress. It's often more nuanced to create more enduring systems so that progress can actually accelerate as well, which is our goal.
Well, and I'll just say, based on also just history, when I was working in cloud computing, if you don't regulate, you actually then go back, because that history tells us, and I know a lot of you all saw this in cloud with facial recognition was a great example. The tech companies were coming out and all of a sudden government was like, whoa, slow down. So then I was at Amazon at the time. We had to stop a lot and go back to government and say, will you help us please create the right models and standards for this? So I actually think sometimes going a little bit slower to go faster is a good thing, because if you don't engage government, and that's, I think, part of our philosophy with Institute, let's engage government early and actually educate them on, look, light touch regulation is good, over-regulation stomps out innovation. So just having this conversation and having a dialogue, because they want to understand. And part of it, again, we're not doing it in a really organized fashion. So the light touch regulation for us is going to be key when it comes to AI. Otherwise, I'm afraid we're going to have to stop and keep going back and then try to go forward again.
Let's turn to national security. Teresa, what steps are you taking for GCI to drive American innovation, excellence, and U.S. security interests?
Well, I'm really excited about, if you all had a chance to read our blog, we announced a new Defense Risk Committee, which our two founding committee members are here tonight. Andy Macritas, who's the former COO of the CIA. Andy, can you say hi over there in the corner? And Rich Gross, who is a retired one-star for the Army, and he's also the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, JAG officer. Where are you, Rich? Oh, there's Rich over here, who's general counsel. And I'll also just say, there's somebody in the room, I'll just point out, John Edwards, who I've worked with for years, who was also at the Central Intelligence Agency helping drive cloud, and has also been kind of a side individual talking to us about the importance. And we're doing that as one initiative to really think about responsible policies also. Secretary Mattis with the Defense Innovation Board had a group that talked about this a lot. And this has been written about on responsible investing in innovation in the defense and intel sector. And we want to add to that. We have so many great companies that we've invested in both in the U.S. and internationally. So I think it's important for us to get out there with a dialogue on that and have a really great discussion. So that'll be one. Also, Tammy, it's going to be important for us to get in front of those committee members that are driving and thinking about this both at the House and the Senate side, and the individuals that, you know, think tanks we can work with, other groups that are really writing and thinking about these top issues, because I don't know that we're going to see anytime soon the war go away. We might see an expansion, and we need technology to be ready and prepared, and we need the right policies in place to drive the innovation. And what we hear from our defense and intelligence partners is they want to go faster, they want access to this innovation, and they want to be able to see that innovation. So that's really part of our strategy too, make sure they see what's available and then work with the lawmakers to make sure we can get it out in front of them. And there's no acquisition or policy barriers that allow them to move really quickly when they want access to this innovation.
Hemant?
Investing in defense and security has been something, first of all, we've done for 20 years. We made our first investment by acquiring a company called BN Technologies, which is where the ARPANET was invented. It was a defense contractor, often called the Third University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And we invested in Anduril, we invested in Helsing in Europe. And every time we do one of these, it becomes extremely controversial because everybody's got an opinion in the partnership for this defense and these people's lives, and none of us were experts. So really, I want to give Paul Kwan, our head of global resilience, credit for creating this risk committee so that we can actually lean on experts that have thought a lot about this. Ultimately, our goal is how do you create deterrence so that democratic freedoms remain? In fact, frankly, capitalism remains, which for us, it's a license to stay in business. And so it's a very critical area to invest in, and we have put a lot of thought into it. We used to be afraid of should we invest in companies that are doing kinetic weapons or not. Andy wisely guided us once that the way you draw the line for deterrence is whatever you need to do so the aggressors don't attack. And I think that becomes a true north for us in how we think about what kinds of things we're going to be investing in. And we're building some phenomenal companies led by values-oriented founders, and we're proud of what they're doing. So it's a vibrant area for us. We're going to continue to invest in it.
Hemant, I do want to give an extra shout out. You know, Paul and I did a podcast with you, but Paul came from Morgan Stanley and was an M&A banker. And Hemant, I think you've had him on for like 3 years now. And he's part of the reason I came. I say he's a great recruiter, but I just want to say he is so passionate about defense and intelligence. And for somebody who really didn't have a true background, he has picked up very quickly from these founders what they need and thoughtfully investing. And again, to his credit, on setting up this committee that will work with them through the Institute. But it's an important step. It's a thoughtful step. So a shout out to Paul because he really is just passionate about this. We call him General Kwan, actually.
Oh, I'm sure he likes that. You wrote a very famous article with Fareed Zakaria from the Harvard Business Review in February 23, talking about urging the U.S. on China and to make sure that the U.S. stays ahead technologically.
Yeah, so I think we're going from unipolarity to a multipolar world, as you think about what's happening today. And a lot of market competitiveness ultimately is going to come down to the race for AI. And the reason is whatever the winning AI technologies are going to have significant impact on our culture, significant impact on what the market leading businesses are. Because to my earlier point, the workforce transformation that it enables, and therefore the ability to innovate these future businesses, is a stunning capability. So we are in that race. And we're in that race where we're trying to develop AI technologies in a way that respects the democratic ideals. It's a grassroots. It's an entrepreneurial way. And it's against, you know, a nation that has equal, if not more, urgency and can take shortcuts in terms of making sure all the data is available for what they're developing and has a different set of values that they want to manifest in that AI. And by the way, this is, to me, not just a U.S.-centric comment. All the democratic markets, India's got the same opportunity to think about, Europe's got the same opportunity to think about. And so a lot of what we think about is how do you develop AI in this messy world of democracy where you don't have the ability to just say, I'm going to put all the data in the data warehouse and do AI to it and create a collaboration environment and trust between these different geographies that they themselves aren't going to get left behind in the context of each other. Remember, US wants to win against China, but Europe also wants to make sure that US technology companies don't dominate them like they did in cloud, thanks to Teresa.
Yeah.
And so there's all these dynamics we have to make sure we focus on. And that requires innovation and partnerships and requires real collaboration across these different geographies. And that's hard. So we're just trying to bring attention to the fact that that needs to be a priority for all of us.
Well, that's all our time. I want to thank Hemant Tabbaji because this is really exciting for Washington to have the General Catalyst Institute. I hope you'll come back often. And we can't wait to hear how you transform the world. I love that. Let's thank them, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media.
Thanks for listening.